In this episode, I have a chat with the art director of the design mechanism as we have a behind-the-scenes look at all those exquisite pieces of artwork that we find in everything from rule books to source books. Welcome to the Mithras Matters podcast, Season 1, Episode 51, Illustrations, Artists, and Artwork. Hello and welcome back to Mithras Matters, a podcast dedicated to the Mithras rule set and all its supplements. As always, I'm your host Inwills and welcome to November. As the number of daylight hours change here in the Northern Hemisphere and we in the UK just gained an extra hour of sleep, we embark on the winter season of our gaming calendar. I always find that in winter there appears to be many more holidays that interrupt the gaming schedule. We have Halloween and Thanksgiving, Christmas and New Year, and in the UK we have Bonfire Night on the 5th of November. Remember, remember the 5th of November, gunpowder, treason and plot. This is when we celebrate the foiled attempt of Guy Fawkes, who nearly blew up the Houses of Parliament back in 1605. I think that would always make an extra plot for a Luther Arkwright adventure, where the disruptors travel back in time to try to foil the capture of Guy Fawkes. I've listened to a graphic novel featuring Luther Arkwright, and just saying that makes me suddenly realise how stupid that line sounds. But I have to admit, it was excellent. Maybe there is someone or a few people who would like to come onto the podcast and share their experience of the game. And talking about audience contributions, in December's episode of the podcast, in response to a request on the Tapper Talk forums, Doug and Matt will be sharing their knowledge and tips about converting games to Mithras. Definitely not one to miss. So remember, if you would like to contribute to the podcast, then why not just drop me an email or message and let me know what you would like to cover or what you would like other people to cover. We're always looking for reviews or interviews or topics, so if you are interested or have any suggestions, then do email me at inwills@gmail.com or send me a message on the various forums I frequent. I've always been fascinated by the excellent artwork that we enjoy in every publication, so I thought it was about time that I had a chat with the art director of the design mechanism. I learnt so much in this conversation and was very pleased about the design mechanism's view about AI-generated art. So, without further ado, I'll welcome Soph to the podcast.
Hi, everyone. And thank you to Ian for inviting me on the podcast. My name's Soph. I'm the art director at CDM. My job is to choose all the pictures and commission them and to find new artists and to just decide what our books will look like. The words are not my problem. It's lovely. what it looks like is my problem.
And, right.
Commission people to paint for us and draw, and also I manage all the contracts for art and set the deadlines, and I'm always reaching out to new artists because we always want to hear from them because we're always trying to find the right artist for each individual book, and you know, find things that they're going to excel at. And the other thing I do a lot of research about art, about historical subjects generally, because as you know, TDN does a lot of historical settings, and when I'm writing the art direction, which is the sort of description, like the brief for the artist for each image, I have to research things like, you know, what late 15th century Byzantine, late 14th century Byzantine ships looked like.
And
whether there were candles in Babylon. The answer is no.
Fantastic. I love that. Yeah.
But the Chinese invented them, apparently. But because our readers tend to be very, our players are very, very well read, and they spot it when we get things wrong, which we don't usually.
Yeah, fantastic. So how did you get your role in the design mechanism? I'm really interested how you know, came to be the art director. So can you talk us through that?
Yeah, sure. I've been doing this kind of thing for many, many years in the British UK press. That's where I trained. Back in 2019, me and some friends were made a horror role playing game. I did all the design work for, because basically just because I wanted it to happen, and it was such a good idea. If that doesn't sound too arrogant, I just wanted it, I could make it happen, because I'm very good at all aspects of print design and production. So then the design mechanism became interested in the project, and they decided to join us. And then Lawrence Swiftaker, the big boss, headhunted me to take over the art department here at TVM. As I said, I trained in the press and in newspapers and magazines, which you can occasionally see little signs of. Like, I like the pictures to bleed out to the edges.
Yeah, I'm not an art. I don't know a lot about art, but yeah, that sounds absolutely brilliant. So you're head of all the art that goes on in the design mechanism. Yeah,
that's right. I commission it all. I find the artists. I do deals with them, so that they can, you know, they'll work with us and inveigle them into. It's one that I actually quite like. It there's a few people. Everyone likes getting a letter saying, "Would you like lots of money?"
Yes.
I write that kind of letter quite a lot. I was doing that last week, actually.
Excellent. So can you talk us through the process then? So if, Lawrence or the design mechanism are putting together a new adventure or rule set, what sort of like happens? You know, are you in right at the beginning, or do you come in later on?
Well, two things happen. Well, I'll take the second part first. When Lars and Pete and all our other writers and editors are plotting books, as they tend to do, I have an idea of what projects we've got coming up over the next year, and we have meetings every so often saying, you know, we're going to be doing, I don't know, ancient Egypt, big source book, and then we're going to be doing horrible vampires lurking in cellars, and then or whatever we've got, and we have like a big editorial meeting. So I've got those in the back of my mind. Back to the former point, though, what happens when a manuscript comes in from the author? Lars has commissioned them to write a book, and they send their manuscript in. I get it at the same time the editors do, and the editors like look at all the text and make it all lovely, and I get the manuscript at the same time, and I read it very carefully, and I try to identify the most interesting scenes that we need to illustrate, and the general feel of it. Because, for instance, if we had one that was, I don't know, set in the 14th century, you might want a illuminated manuscript type feel.
Yeah.
For instance. I'm reading it, after I've chosen all the pictures, I think we're going to be good. I write the art direction, which is like a description of each image. It's like, you know, so there's a, it would, I sent you one, I believe, but it was, so it says things like, for the cover, it might say things like, there's a big horrible gribbly monster, blue scales, some knights wearing black 15th century plate with fluted Maximilian style and big double-handed swords are coming out to get it, and they're in a cave. There's a waterfall and a big hole in the roof because of a pothole and that kind of
nice.
Thing. It's quite detailed, you know, because it's there to make sure it matches the text. But I try to leave as much artistic freedom for the authors as possible. That's a very important thing for us.
Yeah.
And you know, we have a brilliant community of artists that support us and we work with, and that they respond, you know, respond to the briefs amazingly. You know. So once I've written that, I have a chat with the author, and to make sure I've got all the details right, you know, because people have an image in their minds, you know,
of course,
of what, you know, what their world looks like, do their characters have, you know, say there's a villain in them. And does it might be the author thinks of having really like, really luscious shampoo advert type long hair, really, you know, it sort of flicks in Tim Taylor like manner. That's the kind of thing they'll spot that, or they'll say, oh, can we make them have this hair, or can we, you know, I thought that, you know, the streets of such and such city should be more grotty and have more rubbish around the place. And we do that kind of thing. So I talk to them quite in detail. So we you know, we make sure that we get their vision is portrayed correctly. And while all that's going on, Loz will have said, you know, how big the book's likely to be, and you know what our budget is for it, and when we're happy, I start talking to artists. Depending on what it is, because they've all got their different strengths and preferences.
Yeah.
So that's, for instance, one of our artists loves doing undead and he's incredibly good at them. And it's like, just these fiends, they're always revolting. Absolutely. I'm not going to name the person, because the readers will probably know who it is, who does the amazing undead, but he's just so good at them. He just loves them. And like, there's another artist we have who is really good at water,
right?
I just love doing anything water, anything that's in, you know, flooded caves or boats or, you know, pirate happenings or anything like that. You know, just love it. So when I'm commissioning, if we've got a cover, say that's got a sea bath on it, you know, I'll look at them and everything. Yeah. And I say, you know, do you fancy this one? You know, I offer them to the artists who, you know, like those subjects and whose best strengths are in those fields. And also, equally, you know, when I'm looking at a book, I often think of artists that I've researched or artists that, you know, have contacted us, and, you know, I think this really feels like, you know, something for Jane X, and I'll write Jane a letter and say, Jane, you know, I've got this art direction, got, you know, here's the kind of thing we're wanting. You know, is that interesting? And she might say, yeah. And she might say, no, I'm busy at the moment, or whatever.
Sounds absolutely brilliant. I've got so many questions. So I didn't realize, you know, when you were saying you get the original like manuscript or so do you decide how many pictures go in it? I think it's amazing that you think of which scene. So is there a limit to that, or do you think this would be the right number? How does that work?
Well, there is a limit, because if I did as many pictures as I would like to have, The company would go broke.
And it would be a graphic novel.
And also I get told off by Loz. He would say, you can't do this.
Got you.
Say an adventure, they're usually sort of 48 to 60 pages. So I look at that and I've got a good idea of how many we're going to need. And after a while you can tell from just reading the typed manuscript, you can tell how many book pages that's going to be.
Yeah.
Learn to do it just by eye.
Brilliant.
I have an idea. Generally for one of our, source books, there's about 70 to 80 pictures.
Right. That's a nice range then.
It varies now. And also it depends because if something had a lot of monsters in, like a bestiary type.
Yeah.
So might have a lot of small pictures, but something that was, I don't know, more like a chapter that was more like a description of a country might have fewer pictures, but then they would be larger, like sort of landscapes and stuff like that. So people can just get the feel of what the place looks like to be in. And sometimes it's a mixture.
Yes. Now, I can see how that works really well. You talked about artists. Does the design mechanism have a number of artists then? How many artists do we have that actually contribute?
It's really hard to work out, actually. That's a tough one. We've got a stable of about, they're all freelancers, apart from me, because I do some of the art myself. I do cartography and the little patterns around the edge. Sometimes some of those are mine. We've got about 30 artists in our stable that we use very regularly. But we're always, as I said earlier, we're always looking for more any artists out there, please email me via the Divine Design Mechanism site and, send me a link to your portfolio because I do really want to hear from you.
Sounds excellent. Yeah. And we'll confirm those details a little bit later as well, because like you say, it'd be fantastic. It's always nice to get new blood onto any team.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
Much so.
I was interested whether or not there's so many different types of art in a book, mm-hmm. because they're sort of like what I would call like the line drawing. Mm-hmm. And then right the way up to the front cover, mm-hmm. that is in full color.
Yeah.
Is there different sort of like styles of artists that you have? You mentioned the guy who, that does undead. Are there sort of like people who, some that specialise in line art and some that
there are several artists, because we do, obviously, as you know, we have lots of mono art, internal art. We do have some colour, but we probably will be having more colour in the future. Yeah, there are artists that specialise in line art. There's some of them like to paint in black and white. That's quite common, ink washes I've forgotten the technical term for it. But there's very, very black and white painting. That's glass. Oh, well.
Well, Ed, I would have no idea, so don't worry.
Okay.
Somebody shouting at the podcast player at the moment saying it's
they can write to me too and tell me what it is. Yeah.
It'll come up in the Discord, I guarantee.
I'll think about it at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
But yes, there's lots that have different specialities. All artists like their different mediums. Some of them work digitally. Some of them work with traditional paint and paper. And some of them work with, a mixture. They often draw their thing and then scan it. Then they paint digitally or vice versa. You get people that make textures and then use them collage type way in real life. So real life is not the way to put it, in a material sense rather than a virtual sense.
So there seems to be a huge range of styles, and I was interested, where does the design mechanism sit with AI? Because that's up and coming at the moment, and I see it around, you know, Adobe Firefly make this picture? So where does the design mechanism sit with that?
We have a view that we don't approve of AI art and we won't be using it. And the reason for that is it's immoral because it's stealing from artists. Also, our artists can give us, a bespoke response to, not just some prompt. If I write like a page of description or the brief for a cover for one of our covers is usually two or three pages. Also, they're all trained on stolen art. And we don't think that should be allowed and we'll never rip off our artists in that way. And we don't.
Yeah.
Many other companies in the industry have similar policies. Chaosium does, I believe.
Good. Yeah.
And many others do as well. We're not alone in this view. It's just not on really. And, we want to support our creative artists.
Very, very much so. I think that's a very, very strong and a very dedicated point, to support the artist rather than what you're saying, that I do believe, AI sort of like grabs from everywhere and produces something.
Yeah. Sometimes you can actually see who they've ripped off.
That's not good, isn't it?
Not good at all. I've tested some of these to see that kind of thing. And one of the other reasons we don't use it, apart from the immorality of it, is our readers deserve like unique things that only they can have. Something that's churned out by a computer, which is using other people's ripped off stuff, is just going to be stereotype nonsense. Whereas the things that our artists produce for us are exactly right. I mean, they are exactly as the author likes it, right down to the number of bolts on the bottoms of the boats. It's right. And it's also, something that only we can have. And that's the only thing that's good enough for our readers.
Exactly. And I think, you mentioned beforehand how much historical knowledge goes into it. And then there's this unique but almost bespoke piece of art that has been created with both the author of the publication, they've had that input, it sounds, into that artwork. Yeah. So that sounds a brilliant reason, to keep that uniqueness.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, it's not really a choice. I mean, we can't go do anything else really. I mean, it's nothing else is good enough.
Yes, yeah, and I think that's really good for readers to hear, that is the bar, and that almost like that personal affirmation of, you are always getting this sort of artwork, and that is unique and bespoke, which is brilliant.
Yeah. And it's the unique creation of the individual artist. I know them all, worked with them for a fair few years now, and some of them have become, I'm on very friendly terms with them, and they can, and some of them really are creative geniuses. They're amazing. I mean, and it's so wonderful to see. You have the brief or the text of the adventure or whatever it is, and then they just bring it to life. And it's fascinating. It really is fascinating to see, actually, watch whatever happens.
I think it's fascinating from my reader point of view, because it really sets the scene and the environment and the feel for a new rule book or an adventure or anything like that. It's almost like that the words have their place, but the artwork also has its place, and then they both seem to come together to form the final product. So say somebody is out there and they're a budding artist and, they really would like to have their work seen. What is the process there? How do they, what do they need to submit, etc.?
Right. For us or in general?
For I think for us, I think that'll be the for the design mechanism.
Well, the best thing to do, many artists have online portfolios at places like ArtStation or on their own personal websites. That's a very good way of getting noticed, because nefarious art directors like myself are known to look at those sites to find new people to try and hire. So that's always a good start. But many artists do contact me directly. They write to me saying that, you know, I'm an artist. I do, I specialize in, say, fantasy and character work. Here's a link to my page where you can see some of my stuff. And I then go off and have a look at it, and I will put their name on the list. It may be that I haven't got anything that's suitable for them at that present time. The following week, I will do. When I'm looking at people's portfolios now, I'm looking at what they do, what they've done in the past, and the kind of subjects and styles they like. Because I'm always wanting to give people commissions that really fit.
Oh, very, very much. I think that's a fantastic way. Yeah.
Because if they happen to really like. Like working in ink, say, you know, ink wash, and then I've got some pictures of horrible marshy swamps and fens that are full of revolting ghosts. I commissioned some of those last year. thinking of a particular book in question. I see that they love doing all this stuff, and I think, yeah. Yeah, I'll offer you that, and you'll probably enjoy that.
So it's really matching their skills and style to the text. And then sort of like publishing it. So what's your favourite style?
I tend to like traditional oils, though. No, it doesn't actually have to be real oils. It can be.
I
like line art. I kind of like old-fashioned engraving sometimes as well. Yeah. I like things. It's quite dark, actually. Which is probably for the best, because in our books, people tend to be like going down horrible holes and
exactly.
meeting people you'd rather not meet.
Yeah, and you know, villains, and I think it's always really good as a GM if I'm reading an adventure or a setting, I can picture what the villain looks like, you know, or what that damp underground cellar.
Very much so.
And
that's the kind of thing I'm targeting when I'm reading the text and I'm looking for good villains and like areas which people are going to want to be able to visualize.
So what advice would you give to anybody starting out on their art career, you know, whether or not they want to do things like artists for the design mechanism or any sort of art? You've obviously had this experience. So what would be your advice to those young budding artists or old budding artists, any budding artists?
You've got to be very, very active in advertising yourself, because there's a lot of competition in the market. And bringing yourself to people's attention. If there's areas that you want to work in, like, for instance, properties or subjects you like, find publications or publishers that publish that kind of thing. Find out who their art director is, find out who their art department is, and drop them a line.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. Also, a lot of creative artists have day jobs. Not all of them, but it's quite common to people to have a wide portfolio of jobs. Like there's people I know who work in several different fields of art. There's a chap that sometimes works for us who teaches art at a very very grand school in the US. He's the head of the art department there. Another one of our artists is very, very respected body.
Lovely. Yeah.
Only recently came into doing art that doesn't move around.
Yeah.
which is good. Also, he never, ever makes any mistakes.
Yeah. Well, that's
so
perfect.
Accurate.
Yeah.
I guess you have to be.
You don't want body art that's incorrect, don't you? You want it to be precise.
He's so good. But yeah, so people have, people often have things, they do designs for biscuit packets for their day job, and they're also painting dragons in the evening.
Nice.
The RPG industry is quite small. There's a limited amount of business. There's enough, but you need to have a lot of irons in the fire.
Yeah, and I think that it's that multifaceted approach, but also that proactiveness, and matching their personal style as well, because with publications or books or whatever that seem to match up, would you recommend somebody to... I don't know the first thing about art, I have to say this now, but... is it better for them to become more specialized in a certain type of artwork and drawing, or is it better to keep everything quite generic?
I wouldn't say generic, but it's good to be very flexible in what you do. You may be, some people have ended up as being the go-to guy for painting biscuit packets. Which is actually quite hard to do if you think about it. Because it's got to look right when it's circular, tubular.
Yeah.
And, you get through things like that. And people are also, all kinds of commercial arts, you should be very flexible. But you also, people also often, as their careers go on, fall into a niche, to use one. And an artist that pretty much all our readers will know, Larry Elmore, ended up being the look of D&D for many, many years.
Yeah.
He did very well at that. So people do fall into niches. But it's always good to keep your options open.
Yeah. Fantastic. I have to ask, are you a role player yourself? Do you?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Player or GM?
Both. I play RuneQuest and Mithras. I also play Fate. Play that quite a lot. Play Casting the Runes, which is our horror game, which I talked about earlier, which is also published by TDM, but that's that works under Gumshoe.
Yeah.
Classic
fantasy?
Classic fantasy, I class that under RuneQuest and Mithras.
Right, got you. Yeah. So lots of enjoyment there as well.
Yeah, I used to play Call of Cthulhu quite a lot, but I don't anymore because I got sort of tired of tentacles.
Nice. I like that. Thank you so much for spending some of your precious time to chat to us. It's really been enlightening. I find it so interesting to see behind the scenes. And what goes on. And it's really good to know how much dedication, is given to the artists and their style and what they bring to it. So thank you so much for coming along onto the podcast.
Thank you, Ian. It's wonderful to have a chat with you.
It was great to hear about all the excellent artwork that goes on behind the scenes in the art department of the Design Mechanism, and to everyone who has contributed to the artwork in any publication, a huge thank you. Your work makes the words burst into life and stirs everyone's imagination. Please keep up the great work. And that's it, another episode of Mithras Matters completed. Don't forget you can check out all my content by following my YouTube channel and the campaign areas on World Anvil. I really appreciate your support. And do also check out the Tapper Talk forums and the Discord, where there are loads of people sharing their ideas within discussions. So, until next time, have a great month of gaming, and I will chat to you all again in December with the episode about converting other games to Mithras. Until then, I hope all your opposed worlds succeed and provide you with a well-deserved special. Thanks for listening, everyone. See ya. Bye. The content of this podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license, so please give appropriate credit if you are sharing or copying any part of this podcast. Thank you.